Well, hello, this is Bob Sutherland with the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from a number of sources. Today will be from the Triangle Business Journal, from the business section of the Raleigh News and Observer, from the Wall Street Journal, and from the Bloomberg and Reuters of the Internet. Today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Well, the markets run fast, only to stay in place. U.S. stocks and bonds appear deadlocked despite a positive response to Friday's Goldilocks jobs report, reflecting the conflicting impulses of a strong economy faced with rising interest rates and creeping fears about inflation. Lingering concerns over the durability of global growth and the likelihood of tightening monetary policy have left many investors in a rut, neither inspired to pour money into the market nor convinced they should bail out just yet. The market's inability to get a meaningful boost from the glut of strong corporate earnings reports over the past few weeks has further sapped investor confidence. Other events that likely would have spurred the markets last year, such as the unemployment rate falling to its lowest level in nearly two decades, and Apple announcing an additional $100 billion in share buybacks, they failed to spark a sustained rally. That is, some investors saying they expect to see more volatility and weakness in the weeks ahead. People are in a bit of a holding pattern, said Jonathan Golub, chief U.S. equity strategist at Credit Suisse, adding that investors from big institutional money managers to mom-and-pop shareholders are finding it difficult to pick industries to buy into in this environment. Well, the forecast to fail, missing oil's rise, and nearly 12% climb in crude this year has upended predictions on Wall Street. No one is more surprised by $75 oil prices than Wall Street. The price of crude has climbed nearly 12% this year and has reached its highest level since 14, a rally that has caught most big banks flat-footed. Last December, analysts surveyed by the Wall Street Journal predicted that Brent crude, the international benchmark, would average around $57 a barrel in the first quarter. Instead, prices averaged $67. And on Friday, Brent prices rose to $74.87 a barrel. Analysts often get it wrong across financial markets. Last year, they wildly underestimated gains on the S&P 500. Gold hasn't followed the script of the almost yearly predictions for higher prices, and U.S. bond yields have persistently undershot the estimates of many large firms for years. But oil is seen as particularly tricky, given its sensitivity to hard-to-gauge geopolitics and the opaque workings of the Organization of Petroleum Exporting Countries. Treasuries fall ahead of data and auctions. U.S. government bond prices edged lower Monday as investors looked ahead to a series of debt auctions and releases of inflation data. The yield on the benchmark 10-year Treasury note settled at 2.95, that's 2.95, compared with 2.494 on Friday. Yields which rise when bond prices fall have barely moved in recent sessions as investors wait for more data to support the widely held view that declining unemployment should lead to higher inflation and potentially a faster pace of interest rate increases from the Federal Reserve. And the dollar's up. As Europe struggles, the dollar rose broadly Monday as data continued to reflect disappointing performance for the European economy. The Wall Street Journal Dollar Index, which measures the currency against a basket of 16 others, rose for a second consecutive session, climbing 0.2% to 86.33. The dollar gained for the second day against the euro, advancing 0.3% to $1.19 The greenback has rallied 4.9% against the euro after closing at a 52-week low on February 1. The dollar rose Monday after reports showed German factory orders unexpectedly dropped 0.9% in March compared with forecasts for a 0.5% pickup. The soft patch of data is leading some investors to conclude that the European Central Bank may be able to end its $35.8 billion per month bond purchases in September, as some investors had expected. Federal Reserve officials are sounding increasingly confident they can run the United States economy hot without a harmful rise of inflation. That's a risky gamble for Chairman Jerome Powell. With unemployment low, price pressures edging higher, and fiscal stimulus about to goose growth. An improving inflation outlook has helped advance 10-year U.S. Treasuries to a four-year high of 3%, pushing the dollar to its strongest levels in 3 months. Yet policymakers are expected to leave interest rates on hold at their meeting next week and signal no change to the gradual tightening path that they have penciled in for three more 2018 hikes. Their caution, shaped by the post-crisis years in which they struggled to lift inflation, is a departure from the preemptive strategies of the U.S. central bankers in past cycles to stay abreast of the economy's turns. That contrast has not escaped the attention of federal officials who remember the lessons of history. Sometimes I wonder if I risk having my Ph.D. revoked for being seduced into amnesia about the great inflation of the 70s, so said Chicago Fed President Charles Evans on Friday. Goes on to say, we have the opportunity to more patiently read and react to the incoming data. Well, locally, the First National Bank tower breaks ground. They call it the FNB Tower. Breaks ground in downtown Raleigh. Construction officially began on the $116 million tower in downtown Raleigh on Thursday, one of several large projects changing skylines across the triangle. The 22-story FNB Tower will join a cluster of other high-rises on Fayetteville Street and will become the regional headquarters for First National Bank, which is the Pittsburgh-based bank that bought the Raleigh bank Yadkin Financial last year. The Dominion Realty Partnership backed project will have 7 floors of office space, 239 residential units, and a terrace with a pool. Construction is expected to be completed in 2019. FNB's groundbreaking makes it one of the several large-scale projects under construction in the Triangle, with many more expected to follow in the coming months. And some of the biggest construction projects on the way. The Kane Realty 17-story mixed-use tower grand opening is set for next week, the $150 million project, along with Union Station, transformed the warehouse district from a collection of low-level brick buildings into an area where sleek, modern architecture mixes with its industrial past. The Dillon will add office space, residential units, and the grocer Weaver Street Market in downtown. Another project that's getting close to completion is Austin Lawrence Partners One City Center in downtown Durham. The crane has already come down from the 27-story tower that now dominates the skyline. The remaining work is taking place on the interior, where Duke University and co-worker Wet WeWork will become tenants. Labor Department released its April hiring and unemployment report Friday, providing the latest snapshot of the economy. The unemployment rate was 3.9%, the lowest rate since 2000, and a sign that the job market has become even more competitive. It had been 4.1% since October. 164,000 jobs were added last month. Wall Street economists had expected an increase of about 193,000, according to Bloomberg. The Labor Department revised the job figures for February slightly downward, but revised the numbers for March sharply upward. The result was a net increase of 30,000 jobs compared with previous estimates. Average earnings rose by 4 cents an hour last month and are up 2.6% over the past year. U.S. employers continue to find reasons to expand their payrolls. April marked the 91st consecutive month of job gains, far and away the longest streak of increases on record. The average monthly gain has declined each year since 14, but that's normal for an economy that's been in recovery for such an extended period of time. This is an excellent article from Bloomberg entitled "A Fix Everyone Loves to Hate for the $4 trillion Retirement Savings Gap." Saving for retirement is hard enough, but another difficult challenge is making sure the money lasts. Invest your nest egg conservatively, and you might not be able to stretch the money out, especially if you live longer than you expect. Putting more in the stock market could keep the pile growing, but once you stop adding money, a streak of bad returns could decimate your stake and leave you little chance to recover. For many years, many retirement experts have pointed to a potential solution, and that is annuities. In its simplest form, buying an annuity involves taking part of your savings and handing it over to an insurance company. The insurer then pays out a guaranteed income for the rest of your life. In theory, putting at least part of your retirement savings into an annuity can make sure you always have some income, no matter what the markets do. Now, even so, annuities gained a bad reputation in some circles. Many annuities are really investment products combined with insurance, with the option of creating a stream of annuity income as just one of their features. The commission-based sales model, common in the insurance industry, often meant that agents and financial advisors had incentives to push higher-cost annuities. Those products sometimes locked up the money for more than a decade before an investor could withdraw funds without paying a hefty penalty. And complex rules governing how that money was invested, which is explained in filings running 100 pages or more, left many heads scratching their heads in confusion. The insurance industry says it's gotten the message. It was prodded in part by Obama-era rules from the Department of Labor that took aim at conflicts of interest in investment advice. In 16 and 17, sales of annuities dropped as advisors faced uncertainty about the impact of the new regs. Insurers rushed to create a flood of products redesigned to win back financial advisors and a skeptical public. Distributors began culling the number of annuities they offered, and insurers promoted products that paid advisors through fees rather than commissions, sidestepping some conflict of interest worries. Pathway Financial Advisors, which is a fee-based firm with offices in Vermont and Georgia, steered clear of annuities for years. They say, historically, insurance products have been sold, not bought, says founder Scott Buden. Last year, he added an annuity to a client's portfolio for the first time, largely because the products have become simpler. But the Labor Department's conflict of interest rules are in trouble. In March, a U.S. appeals court struck them down, saying they were outside the department's authority and unreasonable. The Trump administration hasn't appealed. And some think the improvements aren't enough to make annuities more appealing. From my perspective, there haven't been any real dramatic changes in product design, so says Ken Nuss, who is Chief Executive Officer of Annuity Advantage, an online marketplace. Andrew Comerow, co-founder of Talcott Financial Group in Farmington, Connecticut, isn't convinced either. He says the main difference between the latest products and those insurers sold before is that the new ones are being aggressively marketed to fee-based advisors. the issue of retirement savings has become more pressing, as well as a swell of baby boomers ages out of the market. Investors eventually may be able to buy annuities without going through advisors or agents. Employment-based 401 retirement plans could become the gateway to insurance against outliving one's savings. Under the Obama administration, regulators made it easier for plans to make simple annuities an option. They also changed some regulations to encourage what are known as longevity annuities, which don't start payments until you're about 80 years old. The idea is to provide protection when you're most vulnerable while letting your own savings handle the early years of retirement. Because the coverage starts later, longevity annuities can offer more generous payments for a smaller amount of money. Some research has found that putting away as little as 10% of a 401k balance at retirement into a longevity annuity could significantly supplement Social Security and support an elderly person's income. But there's an obstacle to annuities in 401ks. Many employers worry they'll get sued if the insurer they chose to offer an annuity gets into trouble 30 years down the line. A bipartisan bill winding its way through Congress seeks to give employees some legal protection. Whatever the outcome of the regulatory battles around annuities, Price has one piece of advice for the industry. Stop building the next whiz-bang product, he says. Excuse me. Insurers should aim to think about finding better sources for clients. Well, locally again, California buyer to pay $3.5 million for Shaw University's WSHA radio station has some alumni concerned. An application filed with the FCC this week revealed the purchase price of Shaw University's radio station, WSHA. Educational Media Foundation, a California-based nonprofit organization, will pay $3.5 million for the station's 88.9 FM frequency, pending FCC approval. In addition to the FM frequency, the sale price includes three station translators in Rocky Mount, Fayetteville, and Lumberton. Shaw announced the sale in March but declined to disclose the sales price. Paulette Dillard, interim president of the historically black university in downtown Raleigh, said the sale is part of a plan to overhaul the school's Department of Mass Communication. The Educational Media Foundation operates radio networks, specializes in adult contemporary Christian music. According to a recent article in the state journal Inside Radio, EMF's National Christian Adult Contemporary K-Love format has 558 stations in all 50 states, Christian air outlets in 48 states. There was some criticism the sale brought from the Shaw alumni, including Kesha Monk, who told the News and Observer in March that the university is selling out its history for a few pieces of silver. A movement to save the nation, to save the station, was started in December with a change.org online petition, which to date has more than 2,000 signatures. Additionally, a group called Friends of Shaw University has also been outspoken in its criticism of the sale. Well, First Citizens and KS Bank Corporation of Smithfield could be in a lengthy fight. That's according to a jointly filed case management report filed in First Citizens' lawsuit against the bank April the 26th, and they list a proposed date of June 10. That's nearly 2 years after Raleigh-based First Citizens lobbed its second failed buyout proposal for the Johnston County Bank. First Citizens, a KS shareholder, had filed suit February 9 in an effort to quash a KS poison pill provision that prevented First Citizens from increasing its stake in the firm, a move that came after its takeover attempts were rejected last year. The Raleigh Bank won a victory of sorts in March when a North Carolina business court judge ruled the provision was unlawful. But the suit, which also accuses KS management and directors of breaching their fiduciary duty, continues to play out in back-and-forth briefs. It's unclear how a pending shareholder proposal to convert KS to a Delaware corporation, that's a move management has told shareholders might mean friendlier interpretations of poison pill provisions, might impact the case. In the meantime, KS is reporting growth, albeit at a slower clip than in years past. In its latest earnings report, KS disclosed a net income of $764,000 for the 3 months ended March 31. That's a 21% jump from $603,000 for the same period a year ago. First Citizens also reported its latest earnings. The bank, now at $34.4 billion in assets, reported net income of $100.2 million in its first quarter. Franklin Templeton Bond Chief Michael Hastenstab predicts rising inflationary pressures, an onslaught of U.S. bond supply, and the Federal Reserve's move to pair its balance sheet will conspire to drive up rates. Jamie Dimon, J.P. Morgan Chase & Company's Chief Executive Officer, made a similar call. He says that's a perfect storm for putting upward pressure on treasuries, Hastenstab said in an interview with Bloomberg TV. The U.S. economy can definitely deal with a 4% or higher 10-year treasury yields. The two investors are at the vanguard of a bearish camp in a growing debate over where treasury yields are headed after they crossed 3% last month for the first time since 2014. The bond calls for Hastenstab and Dimon go against the consensus. The median forecast of 60 analysts surveyed by Bloomberg sees the 10-year yield rising to 3.14% by year-end. Only one has it above 4%. PIMCO, at Pacific Investment Management, Dan Ivickson, has argued it's premature to declare the end of the 3-year bull market for bonds. Well, big banks thump their small rivals. It's a good time to be a mega bank. In many businesses, the largest global banks such as J.P. Morgan and Bank of America are getting bigger, while others are struggling to keep pace. The latest example, the volatility-induced surge in first-quarter stock trading revenue that smaller U.S. investment banks almost universally missed out on. Stifel Financial Corp., Raymond James Financial, and Evercore and Piper Jaffray all reported drops of 10% or more in stock trading revenue for the first 3 months of 2018 compared with a year ago, according to company filings. That results in a lowest market share in years for mid-tier trading firms. By contrast, trading arms of the biggest banks, that's Morgan, Bank of America, as well as Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, and Morgan Stanley, posted gains in equities sales and trading revenue ranging from 26 to 38% for the quarter versus a year ago. That suggests one widely held prediction coming out of the financial crisis, that is, that regulation would crimp giant Wall Street trading desks and open opportunities for nimbler, less regulated trading shops, and that is not holding up. Well, Sprint and T-Mobile agree to combine. Rivals strike a $26 billion all-stock deal testing antitrust regulators as 5G race eats up. T-Mobile USA struck a $26 billion deal to buy Sprint in a combination that, if allowed by antitrust enforcers, would leave the United States wireless market dominated by three national players. It is the third time in the last 4 years that the two rivals have attempted the combination. The leaders of both companies are determined to close a deal, if only because their prospects going it alone grow dimmer by the year. New technology, stiff competition from wireless rivals, and an aging cell phone sector keep driving Sprint and T-Mobile into each other's arms. Both companies hope to squeeze billions in savings by uniting operations despite their owners' different management styles and a tough regulatory environment. The all-stock deal would see T-Mobile, which has a market value of $55 billion, take control of Sprint, which has a market value of $26 billion, both based on Friday's closing prices. Well, you can limit death's financial cost, if not the emotional ones. This is from Warren Kozak, writing in the Wall Street Journal. He says, I pride myself on keeping meticulous financial records, but since my wife died January 1, I discovered I'd made some real rookie mistakes that led to hours of extra work and substantial fees. The transfer of assets between spouses can be fairly simple if you learn from my mistakes, he says. Dr. Lisa Jane Krenzel and I shared everything throughout our marriage. Like many couples, we split responsibilities. I paid the bills and made investments. She took care of our health insurance plus a house. We maintained individual checking and savings accounts, as well as separate retirement accounts from various jobs throughout our careers. Now, what did go wrong? Well, issue one, when we opened those checking and savings accounts, we never named beneficiaries. I had assumed, incorrectly, that our accounts would simply transfer to the other in case of death. The banker who opened the accounts never suggested otherwise. With a named beneficiary, her accounts would have simply been folded into mine. Instead, I had to hire a lawyer at $465 an hour to petition the court to name me as executive of her estate. I needed this power to transfer her accounts. Filing costs in New York City for the necessary document was $1,286. The running bill for the lawyer stands at $7,402, and I expect it to rise. I also needed the documents for the companies that manage her retirement accounts and mutual fund because at the bank we never named a beneficiary. By the way, this paperwork also required signature guarantees and a notary seal, which can take up an afternoon. Now, issue two, the highly charged question of funeral and burial. Last summer, when I was told Lisa would not survive the illness, I tried to raise the issue of burial with her. She refused to have the conversation, but I quietly went ahead and purchased a plot of graves in the cemetery in Wisconsin, where my parents, grandparents, and great-grandparents are buried. That was something I actually did right. We had to employ two funeral homes, one in New York, one in Wisconsin, and her body had to make the journey out there. All told, I spent $46,359 to cover funeral expenses, graves, transportation, a headstone, and a basic casket. I noticed something interesting in this process. All of my fellow baby boomer friends have so far refused to deal with the issue. They wince when I even raise the question. Well, we've run out of time for today's Money Matters. I hope you've enjoyed it, and be sure to listen next time. I'm Bob Sutherland, reading for the Reading Service, and today's reading of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency. They've served our community since 1974 and can be reached by dialing 919-781-1973. Content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. The broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, trianglereadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. So long, until next time.